This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
All right. Chase Bryant, my guy. It's been since
a long time.
BC, before COVID, brother.
Yeah.
How the hell have you been doing?
Man, it's been a great AC now.
Yeah.
Been great. I've been great, man. I've just been sort of, you know, in this process of putting all these projects out. So it's kind of been a, you know, you used to sit around and like, when are we going to get one project out? Now it's like, holy shit, when are we going to get five out? You know what I mean? It's like, now I'm working on this. It's just wild.
Yeah, new record.
Yeah, new record. Well, it's like, it's weird because I've got, you know, I joke around and say this, but it's not a joke, actually. Like, I had this little Craftsman toolbox full of hard drives, and I've always had a studio at home to some extent, or I've always been kind of the guy that wanted to travel and like make records in like random places. And so, you know, when I took kind of my little hiatus, like around 2018, I guess it was after the Brad Paisley tour. I think it was 2018.
Yeah.
My manager kind of knew I was cutting all these projects, and at one point just came to me and was like, I think we put them all out, like all in a year, five projects, span it out, put them all out, break them up into EPs and just see if people dig it. And I was like, all right, great. You know, and it was really wild. And so that conversation arose. I wound up cutting another one, which became Somerville, my first project I put out this year. And then Ashland City, you know, is my next project. Obviously that just kind of like, I've just never been able to stop. It's like, I've never known when to stop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I feel like while the inspiration hits, it's like, just get on it, you know?
So. Yeah, dude. And you're a guy. So you and I first met back in, of all places, freaking New Jersey.
Yeah.
Cause that's where I was living. And it was, I'm trying to remember if you were like, what, if there were any club shows up there, if you did Hoboken or
well, there was that. But then I remember there was an infamous night that we played a place called Prospectors.
Oh.
And there was a big bar fight that night.
Yeah.
And it was like everyone off stage, we're all in the middle of this bar fight. It was the nuttiest
Mount
thing.
Mount Laurel, New Jersey. New Jersey's an interesting place because obviously you've got different sections. You can get from one side of the state to the other in about 3.5-4 hours. Small as fuck. But there's a lot of people. And it's like so dense, but it's like North Jersey, which is near where I grew up in New York, just over the border. It's like Sopranos, like How You Doing, like the real Guinea stuff. And that's like your Italians and more like your New York City influence. Then you have like the middle, which I call like the armpit. Like it's Newark. It's a little dirty, a little grungy. And then you get down south and they call it the Garden State because of all the produce that comes out of there. And there's some rednecks. There's we call them the Pineys that live in the Pine Barrens in the state, in the woods in South Jersey. Yeah. And those are the folks that join you at a place like Prospectors.
Yeah.
And that venue is wild. I think I was there that night.
I think it was that night because what I remember was we were trying to come up with a new show intro that was just down your throat, right? Because at the time, I think I only had Take It On Back was like out.
Yeah.
And it was obviously doing really well. We had changed our show intro from like Jack Ingram, Keep On Keeping On, to Metallica, Fuel. Dude, we walked in the venue and people were like scared. Like, what the fuck is going on in here?
Yeah, that was before the whole rock and country thing really crossed
over. Yeah, exactly. So Hardy wasn't quite, you know, Hardy yet. So we were trying things early on. And then we get up there and play these, you know, like pop country things at the time, you know. So anyways, but it's man, so I'm kind of glad to be here today with you and hanging out again, man.
Man, and then last time I saw you in the flesh was at Red Door.
Pre-COVID. That probably would have been it.
Because I moved here 2018. I moved there October 2018, and I know that's kind of when the transition of stuff and just life kind of happens and everything, man, because it's like You were road dogging it.
Yeah.
Hard.
We played a lot.
Headlining and opening and just like random gigs, which I got to do some of that too. Like I got to be a tour manager for the last few years before, and then I got off the road last January. And the road life it's a lot, especially at that level. Like where you have a song that's popping, but you're like figuring out who you are, but music's always been in your blood with your family and things like that.
Right.
and going all over the country. Like,
yeah. Well, I, you know, it's odd too, because I took a break at like the weirdest time, because it's like, I kind of came off the road a little bit and trying to figure out what I was doing musically, and kind of wore out on what I was doing musically. And then, so like going on the road now, it's like, I'm still kind of dealing with the anxiety of it, because it's like, what am I doing? Like, how does this work? You know, it's like it's another world. And like, we've been doing a lot of fly dates and, you know, privates and festivals and things of that nature. It's like, we haven't quite gotten back into like the me headlining my shows and stuff necessarily, like my kind of like clubs or whatever. And so it's definitely been a change of pace, but you know, there's also another kind of like gratification that comes from the road, like when it's good, you know, like when people are dialed in and like really getting into new music, also feels really good. And I think that was kind of a sign, like, we got to do something, you know? And so, it's like the whole COVID thing happens, and then you go back out on the road, and it's, everyone's excited to be there, and you're trying to figure out, where do I fit in this equation? Like, how does this work again?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I was touring hard. You know, like, first tour, we did the Brantley Gilbert thing, and that ran forever.
I saw you on that tour, too.
And that was nuts, you know?
The BG Nation, especially back in those days.
Oh, my God.
That was a machine.
Dude.
Those fans, crazy. It was
rabid. And it was, you know, it was me and Aaron Lewis and him, and then Tyler Farr came on later, and then it was like the four of us, I think, or maybe just me, Tyler, and Brantley, and then we come off that, and we're not sure what's going to happen. Well, then McGraw calls me on the phone, like just cold calls me one day, and I kept it. Funny story, but I kept declining the call because it came through as like, I didn't know the number. And I just was like, what in the world is this? And it was like private or unknown or whatever. And then finally I'm like, hello. And he's like, hey, this is Tim McGraw. You're in my wife's hometown tonight, or wherever we were playing. Like, she was, I think it was Star, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And Old Dominion was opening up for us, what I remember.
Wow.
And I dropped my bag on the ground, and I was like, what do you want? And he's like, well, will you go on the road? You know, do you want to go do some shows this next year? And I was like, yeah. So we're off doing that, and then we're doing that headline run, and then we're, you know, then it's like Paisley, we're on the Paisley, and then we're at Flats, and it's like, it's just like, I just never saw the light of day.
Yeah.
And so I think coming off the road for a while was like the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because that's the first time I ever really felt normal.
Yeah, you can finally breathe.
Yeah, yeah. And it was nice, but I'm also at the point now where I'm like, craving it
again. Oh yeah,
you know what I mean, because I'm in a different headspace now than I was then, and I just feel like I'm a lot healthier, you know, see life in another way now, where I can appreciate it more, because I've had so many things to be appreciative of, but they were all happening so fast that I never really got to slow down and accept the fact that what I was doing was like most people kill to do that.
Yeah. And how old were you when, like, how old are you right now?
Well, I'm 31 now.
Okay.
And I think, am I 31? I think I'm 31. Yeah, I'm 31. but I was a kid when I started playing.
Yeah.
You know, and I was doing shows locally and so on and so forth. And then got a record deal in L.A. And I moved to L.A. when I was 16.
Jeez,
I was out there,
dude,
for a couple of years. And then I came out here. And then I didn't tour for a while, you know, because I was trying to be a songwriter and, you know, wanting to be a producer and wanting to do all these different things. And then I had this little rock and roll country band, really was just this really cool, like reckless little band I had. And it was me, the Adam Box, the drummer for Brothers Osborne, a guy named Andy Prince was playing bass in our band that is in a band called Manchester Orchestra now.
Oh, wow.
And God, I'm trying to remember who else played with us. This guy Ford was playing guitar with us. Anyways, Ford's great. And man, we just doing these little residency shows at a club called the High Watt, which is over at Cannery Ballroom.
Oh yeah, dude, I love that place. And I believe it's just yeah, come back.
Yeah, and
institution.
So like, well, so like, we were over there doing like these kind of one off shows. Me and there was a girl named Lucy Silvis.
Oh yeah,
you know Lucy, yep. John's,
oh, yeah,
wife.
Yep.
Killer. Unbelievable. And so we would like trade off, like she'd open one night or I'd open one night, and we're just kind of doing these little, you know, things. We did a handful of shows, And then it kind of parlayed into, like, we just started doing the show. And I was obviously the artist and the writer, and, you know, and the guys were just, we were just, they were playing in the band, but we're obviously a big part of it. And we're rehearsing this little garage, and then slowly here come, like, record execs. You know, John Esposito's there one night, and then Benny Brown starts walking into the equation of John Loba, and then it's Scott Borchetta's in the room, and then, you know, it was just this Brian Wright, and it just, like, started this underground little swell started happening, and then boom, it was like record deal hits, we get iHeart on the verge, it's just a freight train that never stopped.
Yeah, and being young, like, that's when folks are figuring themselves out.
I was
out.
A kid.
I remember being 19, 20, 21 years old and not knowing what I was doing in my life. Yeah. So to get thrown into that, bro, it makes sense why you needed to take a break. You were just on this train that had no stop, and you needed to catch your breath.
Yeah, I had to. I mean, I really had to. And but I feel like now doing that, I feel like I'm in a more central mindset of like the music that I want to make and need to make. You know? And it's definitely, you know, there's parts of these projects coming out that's a total departure from anything that I've done in the past. And there's some stuff that feels like things that I've done in the past, you know, but I'm thankful for the music I made before, but, you know, I'm thankful for the opportunity to still get to do that, you know.
Yeah, to get to do what you want to do. There's so much power in that, bro.
Yeah.
There's so much power, and you've learned so much on your journey to now you're like, I want to be me. I want to be Chase Bryant, and I want to do my thing.
Yeah.
And with projects that you're putting out now, you're getting to do that.
Yeah.
And that's got to be very rewarding to be able to do what you want to do and have a team that believes in you and really has your back. Not saying that you didn't have that before, but like being in the position that you're in now and being wiser, like, that does come with age.
Well, there was a time where I thought about, you know, I moved to Texas for a couple of years. There was kind of this time where I was like, I don't know. You know, I don't know if I was kind of coming out of a publishing deal and trying to figure things out. I was like, I just don't know if this is like, I don't know anything else. And is this the end all be all thing for me?
Yeah.
And anyways, my wife made a statement at one point. She said, well, and she would be like rude, but she was kind of making the joke. She's like, well, I hope you don't do anything else, because it's the only thing you're good at. And I sat down and thought about that, and I was like, why would you put so many years into something to just see it all go up in flames? You know what I mean? Because you're the guy that's got to torch it, you know?
Yeah.
You got to burn it all off. And I'm still in love with it. I still love writing, you know, I still love writing. I still love making records. I still love playing shows and getting to do things like this. It's like, there's that, you always say, like, oh, I'm so thankful to be here at 5 o'clock at a radio station. And the last thing you want to do is be there at 5 o'clock in the morning at a radio station, because you've been doing it for 100 days before that.
Yeah.
But now looking back, it's like, I really meant that. I just didn't know it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now I look at it like I really meant to be thankful for all these things. And I've got to sort of reflect, you know, so it's been good.
Yeah, dude. And seeing your live shows back in the day, bro. And I can't wait to see one here coming up. We definitely have to get out to one. You with a guitar in your hand, bro. There's there's guys and girls in this town that can sing, that can entertain, but there's not a whole lot that can do that with a fucking guitar in their hand like you do, bro.
Well, man,
there's something like it's just you with a guitar, bro. So I remember being front row at those shows and being side stage at those shows and seeing that, I'd be like, damn.
Yeah, well, there's definitely like, you know, I've got some guys that I could just name off the top of my, like John Osborne, I think is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, stupid good. He's, like, definitely more technical than I am, like, technically good.
Yeah.
Like, he knows, like, he can tell you everything about it. Like, he can tell you everything about a guitar and everything about a solo and knows how to take it from somewhere. I'm not that guy. I just, you know, like, I was always scared of guys like him and Charlie and you know, like, man, I was thinking the other day, like, Hunter Hayes, like...
Yeah.
Dude, one of the most like dangerous human beings on earth at any instrument. And then, you know, I sort of my thing has always just been kind of like freewheeling and just trying to be as reckless as I can.
As somebody who was in with Blaze Rowdy, we say front row or don't go. So we're in the front row a lot. We love that.
Yeah, man.
That energy.
So that's my thing. And I feel really weird without not having that guitar there. So I've always sort of relied on that. And obviously that's been a big part of my career. And I think it's funny to know how many people like don't understand that. Like, I'll come see you and be like, "Oh, I never knew you played the guitar." And it's like, what? Come on. I mean, you know what I mean? And it irritates me now because, like, okay, hot take here for a second, but how many times have you honestly been sick on like TikTok or YouTube or Instagram and you're watching it, some guy is sitting behind a piano like he's actually Elton John or something, and he's and you know he's not playing, or it's like an unplugged keyboard, and it's like, man, when I came here, like, dude, I remember seeing Hardy play at Soulshine Pizza, doing Riders Nights, going, R.I.P. holy crap, that guy is good, and like watching him play like guitar solos on his Instagram page, like on a Paul Reed Smith guitar or something, I think it was, and like I remember reaching out to him being like, man, I think you're incredible, like killer tone or whatever, and you had to have those weapons in your pocket, like you had to be a writer, a player, a producer, something, you had to have all that. And it's like, there's still a lot of great music, but there's also a lot of like these people that try to fool, like, it's, you know what I mean? It's like driving a Ferrari to a party to impress a girl or something, but you don't actually own a Ferrari.
Yeah.
Why drive it?
Yeah.
Like, why not just drive your Honda Civic up there and be cool?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. It's like, don't go to a rodeo and carry a rope unless you're willing to get on the back of a horse and rope a calf. You know, it's like, that's just so, so I'm trying to be more proving in the fact that I still have to prove that I can play a guitar and sing songs for a living. And that's just really strange to me.
Yeah, because you came to town at a time when obviously it's like even like a little bit of a different era, like post COVID with the TikTok stuff, with guys and girls getting an opportunity without getting reps of playing shows, without having those residencies and things like that. Like, what year did you get out here?
Well, I got here as soon as I could, but it was like 2011, 2012, something like that.
Yeah, which is a huge time in the chapter of Nashville, because that's when the boom kind of started.
My rent was like $300 a month, everything included, when I was living here.
Absurd.
Yeah, and I mean, man, like, that's what I missed most about this town, was the fact that when I came in, man, we lived in this little house over on, I lived in this house over on South, in South Nashville, kind of like off Paragon Mills, all that stuff over there by the zoo. Fitting. And, I lived in this basement, and the guy that lived upstairs would fill in for Junior Brown's wife when she wasn't playing acoustic guitar with him, you know, the like pedal steel, the lap steel Telecaster picking dude. And anyways, so I was learning from him some things. And then two doors down, this guy, Ford Thurston, lived in, and he was like, he was a great guitar. I mean, he still is a great guitar player, but he was already playing on some bigger gigs and doing some stuff. And then me and my buddy Adam were kind of living together. And then he's living over there playing with me, and then goes on to play with the brothers. And then it was like, this guy, Luke Nias, was in and out of there, living there. He went on to play with Aaron Lewis and played with a bunch of people. And then it's just like this constant flow of people. But what we did was, we were always in that garage, and we were always working like on our craft and trying to get better and trying to be seen. And it's wild now that you're still, you know, it's just crazy to me that, like, I think about like Tracy Lawrence, right? Like, being over at our management company now, and like how crazy it is that like 20 years later, someone's like, "Have you ever heard Paint Me a Birmingham? Like, that's a great song, isn't it?" It's like, yeah, I heard that shit 20 years ago. Yeah. Like, he was valid then. He's still valid now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the weirdest thing to me. Yeah. It's like, you know, it reminds me of like going into Target, like in like circa 07, 08, and then you find a Beatles shirt. You know, and then you're the coolest kid in town. But it's like, dude, the Beatles have been around since the 60s. They were good then, and they're still good now.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about it. It's crazy. We're in a whole new world of music. And it's done a great and I think it's, like, done bad and done good.
Yes, there's, you know, pros, I mean, and cons, for sure.
Well, okay, so, like, look at someone like Tracy, though, right? Like, I mean, it's like, I'm sure he probably feels like he probably did in the 90s. Like, where he's like, people have caught back on to that, and it's given us great music all over again.
Yeah,
him or Clay Walker or, you know, whoever is part of that whole, like, regime of those guys from the 90s and so on and so forth. And then other artists, like, you know, like what Riley Green done, taking guys out, and Blake Shelton doing that thing the other night in Oklahoma, and so on and so forth. Like, I think that it's really cool. But then I think there's some things where I'm like, is this real? Like, is this actually good? Is there a lifespan in this? Because you look at someone like Bailey Zimmerman,
yeah,
who's like, I watched this thing this morning on him. I think those songs are great. I think they're great songs.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't sing them, but they're great. Like, yeah, there's a place for that. And so I think it's done really good. But then I think there's some where I'm just like, I don't get it. I won't ever get it.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know what I mean? But it's just a different time, and it's completely different from when I moved here, you know?
Yeah, it's even different from when I moved here, and that was only like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like there's a lot of differences in the sonic sound of Nashville. And coming in when you did in 2011, 2012, that's like the bro country era.
Yeah.
And like, there was like a movement, and even then there were folks like hating on the changes that were going on then.
Well, dude, let me tell you this. I'll tell you one of the, I've never told this story, but this crazy story, and you'll get like what I mean in the time frame of when I was here.
Yeah.
But so it come out of those high watt gigs, and there's some label interest. And at the time, I was working with two managers, great guys, and we, Benny Brown at Broken Bow wanted me at Broken Bow, and I told him, like, I was in, yeah, like, great. But Scott Borchetta calls us, and I had never done a business deal in my life.
Oh, no, you're just making music with your buddies.
And I'm just like, everything's being thrown at me. And I'm like, this is awesome. Like, this is cool. So I got to take the opportunity. Just got to feel it out. So I'm driving down Division in my manager's car. And I'm only in town for so many days because I don't even know if I live here yet. I think I might have lived. Yeah, I think I was living here. I was living here because I was already doing the high watt gigs. Anyways, so we get this phone call from Jeff Gregg, our agent at CAA, and he says, Jimmy Harnon wants to meet with Chase at Big Machine, like, not tomorrow, like, right now. And we're like, okay, well, turn around right now. So we turn around and we go back to Big Machine. And we go down to this room, and it's like this cage room thing, you know, that was like fitting for something they had. That was like a boardroom type thing. We go down there and I meet with Jimmy, and Jimmy's like smiling and he's cool, and I'm playing some songs for him and so on and so forth. And he's like, I'll be right back. And he comes down, Scott Borchetta walks in, and I'm like, what the fuck? Because Taylor was such a big deal that you knew about Scott. Like, Scott was a celebrity in his own right.
Yes.
Right? So he walks in and he's like, all right. He sits down. He's like, tell me about yourself. And I'm like telling him about myself. And I love, and Scott's a great guy. Like, for anybody that doesn't know, like, he's a sweet guy. But also, like, very smart guy. So Scott sits down and he goes, play me your favorite song ever. At the time, it was Fleetwood Mac Dreams. So I play it, key of F, you know, doing the Lindsey Buckingham acoustic stuff and then singing the song. He's like, all right, play it in F sharp. And I go to reach for key, don't capo it. I was like, okay. So I play it F sharp. I play it in G. So I start playing it in G. And I'm moving these inversions, like, up the neck, making it sound like just transitioning, you know, like transposing these things. Like, all right, keep going. So where do you want me to go? Play it in B flat. So I'm like, so it was like a test for him to me to, like, how legit are you? Because people are saying you're legitimate, but I'm about to find out, like, how deep this goes. And I played it every which way I could. And we were in talks of doing a deal, and it all fell through. But what it taught me was, you better be ready at every freaking moment, because if someone asks you and you say you're legit, then be legit.
Yeah.
And own up to it. You know what I mean? And so it was a learning lesson, but it was just a different time, you know?
Yeah, it was a different time.
Yeah.
It really was. And now folks are able to have success, not even be here. Like, not even, you don't even have to do the Nashville thing.
Which Radio Tour
blows my mind. Well, and Radio Tour even changed during COVID when it became Zoom Tour.
I know.
And people just had to get up and just be sitting in front of their computer as opposed to traveling around, taking planes, trains, and cars and whatever they could take to get to gigs. Radio Tour I saw it on the other side, being a radio guy. We were spoiled. Radio folks get spoiled.
Yeah.
But what is going on a radio tour like, especially at a young age when you're getting thrown all that stuff and you're on that train of just go, go, go?
Yeah, well, I wasn't like in a bus. I was flying and staying in cities for multiple nights when I was off.
Rental cars
going all over the place, driving through New York City. And
what a joy that is.
That year, I think I was gone like almost 300 days that year. And,
nuts.
And it was nuts. I wrote down every PD, MD, everyone that I met at a radio station. I've got a book at my house that I wrote down every person I met. If they said they had kids and I could remember their name, I would do that so that when I got back, so it was always a constant reminder of like I could keep up with those people. And it was really cool. And I met a lot of great people. It was exhausting. And it was also really weird too, because I was always sort of like, I got a bad rap. Like people were always like, hey, he thinks he's too cool, or he thinks he's whatever. And so the confidence and cocky thing kind of kicked in. And I would admit that I had a cocky side, arrogant side.
I feel like you have to have a confidence to be an artist, though. Everybody's
but what they don't understand at radio is, you know, like I was a weird kid. Like, I'm not saying I didn't have friends, and because I did. I had friends, and I played sports, and I did all the stuff, but I was odd. I was, like, different. And I talk a lot, but I'm also, like, really anxious in those scenarios where I'm like, what am I going to say next? And so I think I got a bad rap for a while, and then I had to make up for that. But I was also the person that when people would say things like, you know, I'd try to be better, and then people would say, Take It On Back is too repetitive, it won't be a hit, and I'd go play the radio show, and I'd play Take It On Back 6 times in a 6-song set. So I paid for it, you know, to a certain extent. I mean, I sort of made the bet I laid in, but it was exhausting, realistically. I mean, but it was also, like, really awesome to be riding in a car, and then you get out, you play the radio station, you leave, and they like you, and they play your song on the radio, and it's like, whoa, what is this, you know? And it was really cool. I mean, I wouldn't trade anything for the world, because it was hard work, but it was good work, and I met a lot of great people in that, and I still have people that I love dearly at radio, and I think there's some great things. But it was nutty, because when I came in, there was no Bobby, and then Bobby Bones came to town, and then that was who I think that guy. I know people look up to Steve Jobs and think Steve Jobs is like a brilliant guy. Like, Bobby Bones should go down as one of the most brilliant people. He really should.
Yeah.
Because what he has done for radio and what he has done for young artists, and the power and that was behind
country music as a whole, dude.
But behind the power behind him pushing a fader on a new song on radio is incredible, and something that he believes in. And he's also really smart. And so, like, when he came in, it changed the whole mindset of radio. Was so different.
Yeah, the billboard.
Yeah, I'm on my way to San Jose. Nope, you're coming back. You're playing Bobby Bones this morning. And it's like, okay. So you go in and you meet him, and you're almost terrified, because he's this larger-than-life radio guy that at the time, I didn't even know what he looked like. Because Instagram was a thing, but it was still kind of like social media was still kind of figuring itself out, you know? And so, like, the radio game just changed drastically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I call it, and people say it's not a game. It is a game. It totally is a game. It is. It's who likes you, what crowd are you running? You know, it is. But there's also, that's what people don't understand, that there's music and there's business, and there's the music business. And both those things go together. But I always used to say that it should just be called the business of music, because at the end of the day, if you want to be successful, that's what happens.
Yeah.
And if people say, nah, it's not true, well, it is true, because TikTok is business.
Yes, it is.
Instagram is business. YouTube is business. Gigs are business. And so it's an interesting way of seeing how the world turns in the music industry. And it's a really cool wheel to be a part of.
Yeah, dude. Know? Yeah, man.
Challenging.
It is. It is a challenge. And that's what keeps people going, and it's just like any business that there is. You have to adapt. You have to figure out how to continue on the road that you're on. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing's going to be just given to you. You have to earn it, and you have to be cerebral with it.
And you have to be ready for change, because you know this, like, music has changed drastically since then, you know, and, like, country music is, there's obviously some that's really accepted now, and then there's some where I'm, like, shaking my head, like, how did this get here? How did we wind up in this spot? I don't hate anything because there's 30 some flavors of Baskin Robbins ice cream. Nobody likes the same exact thing as the person before them a lot of times. And so I think everything's got a place. I struggle sometimes trying to wrap my head around certain, I've got theories on certain things and I'm probably wrong about them, but you know, I got to say, it's like with change, I found myself, I never wanted to be the jaded guy. You know, you never want
to
be that guy.
No, you never, especially when you move to town and you meet the jaded guy. You're like, I'm not going to be this guy.
Yeah, because you write with him 3 or 4 times, and the minute that you write with someone else, he thinks you've traded him. You know, it's like, you don't want to be that guy. You never want to be the guy that's jaded and the guy that hates on other things.
Yeah.
I just, my persona or my thought on it now is like, when you come here, be good to people. And be accepting of people, and try to get as close to understanding everyone as you can, but don't be fake. It, like, if you don't like something, don't like something.
Yeah.
If you like something, like it.
Yeah.
But we don't have to go on Instagram and bash everyone and their mother because you woke up and that's not the tea you wanted to drink.
Go drink the tea that you want to drink.
And just leave it alone.
Yeah, and that's what we're passionate about with Raised Rowdy. Like, you have a lot of online sites and things like that that talk about things they don't like. And Nikki and I have this philosophy that you spend this energy talking about something you don't like, you can be putting that and be passionate about what you do like, and it'll be that much better of a piece of content because it's something that you're passionate about.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Talk about the shit that you want to talk about and that you want people to hear, because if you're putting out something that where you're hitting on something, people are going to go and check it out.
Here's a brilliant concept nobody ever thinks about. You ever listen to records you hate?
Not usually.
Right. So why talk about shit you hate?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you just I don't hate anything.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to listen to it.
Yeah.
I'm going to listen to what I like.
Yeah.
And right now, there's a lot of stuff I like.
Yeah, what are some of the things
I mean,
you
like? Hardy, that stuff's brilliant.
It's so
cool. Morgan Wallen, it's great songwriting. That's what I like about it. Like, the Morgan thing, And I don't even know if you would remember this. I mean, Morgan and I kind of came out around the same time. You know, like, he had The Way I Talk, and I was on Take It On Back. And Morgan and I came at about the same year. Because I remember in that year, it was like me and him and Kanan Smith and Sam Hunt, and there was a bunch of us kind of coming out at the
whole
same time.
That was your class almost.
You just knew that you didn't want to be on an acoustic round with Sam Hunt. Because if you were, nobody gave a damn about what you had to sing about, you know, because it was just girls and they were all there to see Sam. But anyways, just quick Morgan story, because I love this. I love it because now I can look at it and just from an outside perspective. And I'm not the kind of artist that, like, I don't have a ton of artist friends, you know, like I have a lot of artist buddies, but like we don't, you know, like I don't have a lot of guys that we don't like go hang out, but we have good repertoire together.
Yeah.
Like, we have good conversations, and then we might have dinner and then we go on.
Yeah.
But the thing I remember about him was we were at the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee for St. Jude, the Country Cares.
Yep.
And I'm standing outside and he comes out and he's like, "Hey man," he goes, and he's wild, you know, he's wild. You know, he's like high strung, like really, you know, just like funny dude. And he goes, "You want to go down to Bill Street?" I was like, "Not really." He goes, "Man, I can't find a damn person in there that wants to go down there." He's like, "Come on, let's go have a beer." I'm like, "Dude, I'm going up for the night. I'm calling it a night." And he was and it was only a quick, you know, little moment, you know. But what I remember most about it was thinking now, here goes this guy in town that nobody wanted to go get a beer with him. That was there, you know, because he made the comment like, "I can't find a damn person wants to go get a beer," and or whatever it was he, you know, wanted to have a drink or food or whatever it was. But thinking about it, it's like, boy, I bet this whole town would kill
to have a beer
to be in that circuit now. And now everybody, Morgan Wallen's the greatest thing in the world. What about then? Did you go get a beer with him?
Yeah.
I would never try to, like, get a hold of him now because I didn't do it either.
No.
But if he came up and said, you know, I'd talk to him, and he's always been super nice to me. And just, when I've been around him, I mean, I can't say we're buddies or friends or anything, but I just think about this thing. So, Morgan and Hardy, I love that. I heard that Riley Green, Damn Good Day to Leave, and that was like, holy Moses.
Talk about a song.
There's a hook. I love that. I think this Post Malone stuff getting ready to come out is going to be awesome.
I think it's going to be very cool.
I really like it. I mean, and then I still like the same things I've always liked. I mean, I love Randy Houser, obviously, and I love like Joe Nichols. I still love like to hear those guys sing because that's my era of like growing up and hearing those kind of records. But then there's tons of new stuff that I like. I mean, I think there's a lot of great stuff out there, and then there's just a lot of stuff that's just whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I always listen to like New Music Friday.
Same.
On Spotify or whatever, or like Apple, I'll listen to a newer music like playlist and just try to go through some things and find some things I like. And man, there's some great stuff. Like I heard this girl the other day that I'd never heard, Cassie Ash. Is that her name? Yeah, I heard like her song the other day.
Sing,
I was like, holy crap, dude! This girl sings.
I've seen her on Writer's Round.
Like this girl's a singer, dude.
Yeah,
like she can sing.
She's one of those people that you go to see her like where she just happens to be on a round in town or when she was doing that, and the whole bar would get quiet, which is my favorite moment at a round because we host a lot of them. Is when somebody's singing and people are, it turns a bar like a Live Oak or a Tin Roof into the listening
upside
room.
Down.
But
you know, to be honest, like I like Steven Wilson.
Oh, dude.
I wrote with Steven for a long, long time. He's the first guy I ever took on the road to write. Like I was one of the first trips I think he went on as like a songwriter like on the road. And so we became like brothers, you know, and he lost his dad and I was kind of around for a lot of that stuff. I say around during that time.
Yeah.
And we were, God, I don't know how many songs we've written together, but written a ton of songs. I always was like, this guy's got to be an artist. He has to be.
Yeah.
Like, it's inevitable that this guy's going to be great. And I love him. I love, God, I love Lamp. No, I mean, I just, there's so much stuff that I do hear now that there are things that catch me, like the Dustin Lynch Stars Like Confetti. Like, that's not my type of song, but I, for some reason, can't quit listening to it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a great song. Zach Bryan and the stuff he did with Casey Musgraves, I love it. Like, the rest of it's cool. I don't know that I totally connect with it, but like, there are songs that hit me and I'm like, this is really, really great.
Yeah, the Zach Bryan thing, myself and Nikki, to be honest, we didn't get it. Mm-hmm. I didn't get it. And I saw him at a festival this past year. Yeah. I got to see him at two festivals. I saw him at Rock the South in Coleman, Alabama, and Auburn Rodeo in Alabama. And bro, he comes out with like a 12-piece band. It's like a it's like a 2-hour Dave Matthews.
Banjo players passing out on stage.
Bro, it's like a Dave Matthews concert. And seeing the way that people react and sing every song. The live show is what made it for me because I'm like, why aren't the records like this 12-piece big band thing? You know, it's interesting, like that whole subgenre that's kind of coming up where it's like songwritery, but it's not like the Nashville songwriter.
Well, but then there's like, did you listen to Beyonce record yet?
I've listened to some of it.
How are you with it?
I mean, I get it. Like, I get why it's there. I mean, country's the cool thing right now.
Yeah,
country's the thing that everybody's pivoting to. Like, there's all the rock guys moving here right now.
What's like, but what to you, like, what is the country thing? Like, when you say country's cool, like, what part of it?
Just the aesthetic of the Western style of Nashville. I mean, bro, like, we're big in like the butt rock space. That's something that Raise Rowdy has gotten to. Raise Rowdy, we've found ourselves
butt
in
rock. That's so good.
In with that's our biggest social media account. We have an account called Butt Rock, and it's got like almost 90,000 followers, and it's memes of Creed, Limp Bizkit, Hinder, Saliva,
okay,
all those bands.
Keep like, going, but that Limp Bizkit, the last record that they just put out with like
Dad Vibes and all that. Yeah.
My God, I've spun that record so many times I can't count it.
Yeah, it's coming back, and those kind of guys are moving to Tennessee. We're good buddies with the Madden Brothers from Good Charlotte.
Yeah,
they are here in Nashville now. Lit is here in Nashville.
Love those guys.
Fred Durst is rumored to be moving to Williamson County. There's a, like that whole
so crazy.
Everybody. We're like what LA must have been like back in the '80s with Sunset Strip. That is what the energy is like. That's like
we
like folks from like New York and big media companies, like everybody's trying to get into Nashville. The country space and Nashville specifically.
Yeah.
Like we are having our moment right now as a genre.
Yeah.
And it's going to bring in the outside things. Now, am I going to listen to the Beyonce record? I still haven't yet.
Yeah.
But like I understand where it's going and I don't hate it. Like, oh my God, this is blasphemy.
She's the freakish talent. I think like my only thing I always like I wonder about, because there's still some great, like, first off, like Keith Gaddis, Big City Blues, and going back for me, like Jack Ingram, Electric, like those weren't necessarily like straight down the middle country records at all. And there's this massive umbrella of what country music has become. There's also a massive umbrella of like what pop music has become.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool that there's a number of records coming in. The only thing I get confused on sometimes is when I listen, I'll just say this. There's a record that I have a couple songs on as a writer that's coming out, and I can't say anything yet, but another artist. And I listened to the record, and I was like, God, this is so good. And it's in Texas, a Texas record, and he's a hero of mine growing up. And I'm like, so good. And there was a writer in there, and it really made me think. And this writer said, how do they create a Grammy category for guys like y'all down there who make these really great records, but they don't necessarily get up the totem pole as to where the rest of the world can see it at the Grammys? And man, I went home that night and it just like, it crushed me because of guys like the Keith Gaddis records or Waylon Payne or you know, Randy Rogers, which is to me like one of the goats.
Yes.
You know, Just a Matter of Time is one of the, to me, is one of the pinnacles for me as a country artist of records that I love.
Yeah.
But I get to the spot where I'm trying to figure out, there are still genres of music no matter which way you look at it. And I don't claim to be the countryest guy. I don't claim to have ever like been a horseback rider and a cowboy and whatever. I've done it, but I wouldn't claim to be.
Like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to figure out is like, I don't ever, there are some records that don't get the recognition they can because something else comes along with some name on it that proposes to be what it's not really hitting the mark.
Yeah.
But we're going to run with it because we're accepting. We're very accepting in this. Whereas I would say LA is probably not as accepting as Nashville is.
Yeah.
And how badass is it that Beyonce wants to be a part of a country music genre?
Yeah, the post.
And I'm only using Beyonce because it's like the most current thing.
Yeah. And yeah.
But I'm just saying it's like at the end of the day, if, and no one's asking my opinion, but if someone ever said like, you know, how could you know, it's like, don't confuse Grammy ballots just because someone came and claimed to make a country record.
Yeah.
Don't miss on like don't miss on great records. Don't because it's inevitable that those will want like they just go away and then they reoccur later. And that's the sad part, is when they reoccur, because that person may have already moved on and you could have gotten the best of it when it was there.
Yeah.
And it's like that confusing line. And so like it's so funny. Like I love hearing people's thoughts as to like, I think it's awesome. Like, what do you find country? You know, because like I'm from South Texas and I'm telling you right now, like I can't sell tickets in Texas to save a donkey's ass.
Yeah.
Like I can't, it's hard as shit.
Yes. It's very difficult. Yeah.
I go down there and I play this gig and, or I mean, I show up to a gig. It's Wade Bowen and Jake Worthington. Jake's another guy I love.
Oh, dude. One of the best.
And Wade, I love Wade, but I love Lamp. Anyways, I show up to this gig and it's like, everyone's looking at me like, I'm in the boots and I'm in my Wranglers and I'm like living that life down there. But they still could, there's another side of you. Come on, where is it? Like, there's another side. And we're up there singing like a Brooks and Dunn song together or whatever it was. But they know what's that other part and how much are you in this, like how much you doing right now just because you love those guys.
Yeah.
How much are you that guy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's really neat to like go home and get bashed to hell by Texas.
Texas is so interesting though, because you were here in the era and you grew up in the era when the Texas guys didn't come here. Some of the songs came from here, but they didn't come here, and there was like this divide. And there's that famous live video from one of the Ragweed shows where they were very anti Nashville.
Like, always 17 in your hometown is a great one.
Yes, yeah, and it's like they. But now you have guys from that Red Dirt world that have label deals here and are part of this thing in Nashville. Yeah. Guys as far out there as Co Wetzel, guys like Corey Kent who are journeymen, guys like Parker who are journeymen. And then you have guys in Nashville now where Morgan Wallen, I mean, he's biggest, one of the biggest things in the world, but selling out a whole damn baseball stadium in Texas. Like,
crazy.
Like the
crazy.
The bridge between the Red Dirt scene and the Nashville scene. And just
it's interesting to see the things that work. It's like Morgan could go down there and probably sell out Cowboys Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to London on the 4th of July, which I think is just hilarious.
That's crazy.
We're sending a guy from East Tennessee to play in England on the 4th of July. I kind of love it.
I didn't even know that. That's wild.
But
wild.
But then there's guys that are from Texas that can't sell tickets in Texas.
But what people don't understand, like down there, is like, man, I've seen some of the craziest redneckest shit I've ever seen in my life.
Oh,
in New Jersey and New York and Pennsylvania and Washington and Canada. I mean, Canada.
Oh, dude, we love Canada.
Like, Canada is nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And so it's just like really cool. And I love the fact that, like, just beyond music, like, I just love the fact that the Western side of things are being paid attention to again, because man, like, God live the cowboy, man. Like, what like one of the greatest lost arts, that's just like people wanting to be a part of those things again, and like going to rodeos and seeing like this giant diverse crowd of people, and like, I love that.
Yeah,
you know, I really really do. I think it's really cool. And so all that to say, it's like, it's just really interesting, you know. It's like music has become a giant blender of just, there's so much out there.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing, is you and I can not agree on something, but we can go in there and find something we like.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah, there's so much, there's so much out there now in this era where folks can really put out.
Right.
It's a lot easier to get music out now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so much easier. It's so much easier to get an audience now.
Well, you would think. I mean, it took me like 4 years to put something else out, but here we are. You know?
Everybody's a little different. And the traditional movement in country music, like, coming back, and it's like you have these outsiders coming in, put like the Beyoncés, the Posties, the Lana Del Reys, like folks like that doing the reverse Taylor Swift thing, where it's they, instead of going pop, they're going country. But then you have guys and girls like this traditional sound in the songwriting. I think there's so much love for songwriters now.
Yeah.
Not in the Spotify payment set. We're still working on a lot of that stuff, but it's like the appreciation for the songwritery style of songs, I think, is higher now. And
I think it's a big deal that those projects recognize, because and that kind of songwriter too, because I mean, to me, it's like there are some great songwriters. Like, how has Tom Douglas not had like 1,050 number ones? Because all those songs are amazing.
Yeah.
And to know that people, I don't think you have to just write this song to a hook anymore. And I keep saying this, like, I've caught myself saying this recently, like I love the fact that I am so appreciative of the fact I'm so appreciative of the fact that Take It On Back or Little Bit of You or songs of that nature did what they did. And I think there's a place for those songs. And I think there's a place for songs that aren't so deep, because not everybody's willing to get, it's like going to therapy, you know, like, and I've done a lot of that. And it's like, there's some days I just don't want to get that deep. I don't want to talk about certain things some days, and some days I do. And when I want to go find one of those songs, it's nice to know that people still connect with that. You know, like Cody Johnson's a perfect example.
Dude,
like the guy that can do that. I think Parker is too. Like, I think Parker's, you know, like, I think Burn It Down's a little lighthearted, you know, as far as in the sense of things that he can't, like, is obviously fully capable of writing. But God, what a song. Like, it's a great freaking song. I love it. I mean, I love John Randall. He's one of my dearest friends on earth, and he can make a damn good record on guys. But I also love the fact that that artists are still willing to go both ways with that. It's like Zach Bryan writing something like I Remember Everything, which is really like this art to me. That's like a that's a piece of art, and then he can go do. I don't know any of his. I'm sorry, I don't really know any of his other songs, but I know that there are things in there that I've listened to that are lighthearted and they're meaningful for that.
Yeah.
And I think it's awesome that the songwriting element now is more than just lighthearted.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And now,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. And now talking about Ashland City, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
With that now, where you're getting to put releases out into the world again, and this obviously being a huge year for you. What went into like having what you just said, where you can have that mix of stuff and there's room for it all.
Yeah. Well,
talking about Ashland City and the name for the project. I love that too. People, Ashland City, a part of the Middle Tennessee that doesn't get talked about a whole lot. That is just beautiful country. Yeah. And there's good, hardworking people in there, but there's also some dark sides to it.
You know? There is. I mean, I always say that's like, you know, Ashland City for me was the perfect mix of like Texas and, you know, the way I grew up and then the city, you know, because it had elements of both. So Ashland City came about. We'd moved back from Texas and moved up here, bought a house and built a little studio. And it was kind of like I had just come off of. I made so many dang projects. I made a record in Texas. I'd come back. John was getting really busy with everything he was doing. I mean, from Miranda to Parker to everything. And John was like one of the first guys to like really say like, you should just take this on yourself and like see how far you can take it. And so I did. And I just started trying to figure out what songs fit. And there's a couple songs on there that are older, like Wild and Tame, which was me and Keith Gaddis and Ray Wiley Hubbard wrote that together.
What a writing room to be in, bro.
What a day.
room to be in.
One of those moments that like now, like then I didn't get it, but now I look back like I bet I'm probably one of the few people that can say they got to do that. You know, like what a great experience. And so there's that, and then there was another one I wrote with Casey Beathard and Ryan Tindall that's kind of the single off that project called Never Got Around to That. But the rest of it was just like wanting to make a studio or wanting to make a record in a new spot, in a new place, and try to find some new inspiration. And, you know, I wrote with a number of different people, wrote with some people that I had kind of written with, but hadn't spent too much time, like Ryan Beaver, one of my dear friends, him and Neil Medley. We wrote a cool song for that project, and it was just kind of like, I don't know that there was necessarily like, here's what I'm going for. It was just kind of like, I just want to see what this place brings out of me.
Yeah.
And I found that record, you know, and it's just it was a really cool project to make. I mean, I was looking out, and I kind of named all these projects like. There are names, and I think it was like there were kind of like Easter eggs, you know what I mean? And there's some things I'll just let it be, you know, like let people kind of see what they want to see until I kind of put it all out, and it'll make sense. But it's just they're just projects from different places and just different inspiration. Nothing's supposed to sound the same because they came from different. They came from completely different places of the continent, you know? Yeah. So it's like, I mean, there's a record I made down in Alabama in a cabin out on the woods in Alabama where there's like no one there. And then there's, you know, the Somerville Project, which came from going out to South Carolina and spending time there and finding inspiration, writing songs there. So it's just been a process of like trying to figure out how to be open to accepting new ideas and things to push me as an artist.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my first foray into like producing something completely by myself that was going to get released.
Yeah.
And so
that's a rewarding feeling when you can be that hands on with your own project, bro.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I tracked it myself. Yeah. I engineered, you know, the front half of it. And then obviously my buddy Casey Wood, who's an incredible engineer, mixed everything and did a lot of editing and so on and so forth. But it was a great project. And it was also like I got to get with some guys that, you know, Adam and I had, obviously when he went to play for Brothers and we kind of fell out for a few years. But he's still like a brother to me. And that was my first time that we got to do anything that would get to go out into the world. And because the stuff we did years before, it obviously never did. And So I got to work with him, and Russ Paul, killer steel player, came in and played some steel on it. My buddy Ryan, that's out with Kelsey Ballerini now, playing guitar. It was not like I wasn't going after every studio guy in Nashville. I was trying to call buddies, you know, because I just moved back here. I wanted it to feel very like, you know, like just get friends in a room and make a record.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did, and just kind of built it from the ground up.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be. That's the way it used to be, was making cool shit with your friends.
Yeah.
And for you to be able to come back to town and reconnect with all those guys,
exactly.
And that being a focal point of that reconnection, that rekindling of the friendships and those relationships, bro. Yeah. Like,
and I'm just excited for there to be a body of work out there that goes back to like, and hence the reason that I kind of brought up, like, you know, like the Beyonce record or the Zach Bryan stuff or the Morgan stuff. It's like, they're all different projects. And I'm not sure that everyone's going to relate to every single one of them. I'm not looking for that.
Yeah.
I'm just looking for my own sake too, like kind of looking at it going like, what's the most valid? I'm still figuring me out. I feel like we're always doing that. Like, I feel like music is a constant bowling ball. It's like, you know, what pin is it today? You know, which one am I going after? But I feel like I've just kind of figured out, like, there's no one thing for me. Like, I want to capture feelings and I want to capture emotion in a moment when I'm there, and I want to put that on tape.
Absolutely.
And so that's been a very, you know, integral part of like my growth as an artist. And you know, I'm a little older now too. So like, you know, it's like I'm starting to understand things a little more than I did then.
Yeah. What's life like at 31 now, being back in Nashville versus young age moving here?
Different for sure. You're not gonna see me at a bar.
Yeah,
you know?
I remember seeing you at Red Door, bro. I remember those days.
I had my days of I could rage and I could go all night, but man, I just think now it's like I take life more seriously now than I did then. I went through, you know, my mental health struggles, and I went through a lot of that, and I think for me now has been more just kind of like falling back in love with like the kid that I was.
That 16-year-old kid.
Exactly.
Being like, I can do this music.
Exactly.
Thing.
It's like falling back in love with the idea that, like, I love what I do. You know, it's like, and understanding that, you know, my best work has always come from being, like, very well aware. Not rolling into a studio trying to sing, you know, the note that's way up here after a night of all-night beer and pickleback shots at Red Door, you know? It's different, but it's also like life before then, because I'm still trying to find my way back in, you know, I'm still trying to find my way back into this world of like, you know, the unknown again. And that's been the fun part, is like not thinking that you had a couple hits, so you can go, like, I don't even think about those things anymore. All I think about is like now and this new growth and this new period of music and this new period of being an artist. It's like, that's what I'm most excited about, you know, like I don't look backwards anymore. You know, there's no looking back, and there's no like trying to, you know, I try to mend certain things, but for me, it's just like, what's next? Always. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not getting caught up. I mean, we're sitting here talking about this project, and I'm thinking about like, well, I need to go home and cut this song and do this and do that. And so like, I'm always trying to just keep moving forward, but also like be very present in a moment, because I don't want to look back and be thankful for what the time we're spending now. Like, I don't want to realize that a year from now. I want to know that now.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like just understanding more now, just how to be more present, how to be more, you know, in the moment, but also like not go backwards.
And that's something you can do a lot more now, and that you've had that reflection period to where you can be in the moment. And you have to have those moments of, it's all a wave, bro.
Yeah.
It's all a fucking wave.
I know.
I feel like right now we're getting right up there, but now, you know, having been down, like to get back up.
Well, I go to a right after this, so it's just going to go back down.
Who you writing with?
Today I'm writing with a new girl that I've never written with her. This girl named Lauren LaRue. Like, I guess she wrote Roxanne.
Oh, nice.
So there you go, man. It's
hell
like,
yeah.
Speaking of Nashville and people just, you know, writing things completely outside of what a Nashville
does. Does it feel weird being like the veteran in the room now?
No, I mean, dude, you know, here's what's funny. There's an artist I will not name, and I will not say it off camera because I've kept it to myself. But there is an artist that I saw one day at a publishing house, and I'd come in, I'll never forget this. I came in to write, and the artist comes up. He's like, "Hey, man, I got to tell you something." I was like, "Okay, like, what the hell is going on?" And he's like, "Dude, I was your biggest fan in high school. Giant fan." And like, meanwhile, dude, like, I was basically should have been in high school when I started having success. You know, like, yeah. I would have been in like a freshman, sophomore, whatever in college. And I was like, "Well, man, he's like, you don't know. And I'm like, "No, dude, I know you don't understand it." And now, like, watching him pop off and then him, you know, like, I'm still getting used to the fact that, like, I've been here for a minute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily have, like, people coming up like, "Hey, can we take a picture?" Or like, "Oh, my God, we're your biggest fan. Tell us about how you wrote this." Or, that doesn't really happen.
But I mean, just, like, you talk about, like, coming in as a young guy and getting in these rooms with these guys that have been doing it for a while. Just being, like, writing with someone that's newer to town.
Oh yeah.
Like,
I mean,
what's that kind of feel? Do you feel that like full circle kind of thing, or like,
I think I'm probably learning more because they're what got them here is current. You know what I mean? And so like, I'm kind of adjusting to like their speed a little bit, but then also knowing like, okay, well, this is what I know about writing a song. And this is what I know will happen and won't happen as long as I'm in the room. And, but I learn more probably than they do because like, I'm curious to see what makes their wheel spin.
Yeah.
Because what makes mine spin is a whole lot different. I don't listen to a ton of new music. You know, I listen to a lot of old stuff and they're so dialed in that's what I like today. I'm looking forward to it. It's like, I've got an idea. I would consider myself to still think very currently, but it's very much like, I've never tried to let like fall behind. I've always tried to stay up to date, but like, I know that my speed and their speed is a little different because I'm like very slow.
Yeah.
Like, I have an idea and I got to see it and I have to see the visual.
Gotta let it marinate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so they can come in and it's like rocket fire, you know? And so that's kind of been interesting to be the older guy in the room that's still not that old, but been around a little longer. It's like, it's really interesting. And so for like today's write, like, you know, a girl like this is like, obviously she's wildly talented. She's had a ton of cuts and had hit songs. And so I'm willing to like, and let me learn today. Like, what do you have? Like, I want to ride that boat for a day, but here's an idea for me. And how can you help me take this somewhere? Because like, you look at like guys like Keith Urban, like, man, what a genius. Like, sure, he made Golden Road and Be Here and, you know, Love Pain, the whole crazy thing, all these great records that were very guitar driven and band driven. And but look at him now, like, dude, he might be whatever age he is, but it's like he's 20.
Yeah.
Because he's still keeping up. You know, it's just brilliant. And because he's that way, because he's willing to learn.
Yeah,
you know, from these younger guys, so it's really
absolutely, dude. Yeah, that's awesome. What's something you wish you could tell yourself? That's a loaded question.
It's like, God,
like going back to that kid,
younger me,
younger you, like younger you, like the kid that's playing at High Watt, the kid that's jamming, and you're having all these, you're doing all those meetings and like shit's like popping and everything like
close
that.
Close the door behind you. Probably.
Yeah.
I think so. Because it's like, don't let everybody in. You know, it's like, not even the ones that you think are like the greatest. Like, just leave some space for yourself. You know what I mean? It's like, because I gave a lot of myself to everyone, including people that were like really close to me. And certain times I watched that backfire and you know, from friends and stuff. And it's like, I just wish that I would have made a little more time to myself to like really hone in on me, but also think like too, just tell them like it gets rough, but it's like smooth sailing after, you know what I mean? It's like, I love that. And you know, I watched, like, I think about this a lot. I watched this thing on Diane Nyad the other night, swam from Cuba to Florida Keys. And I was watching her swim, and, you know, the first, like, however many miles she did, and she's, like, almost 70 years old when she swims this, by the way. Done it, like, five times and stung by man-o-wars and stung in the eye by box jellies and, like, made it while the doctors got stung and going into, like, cardiac arrest. And she's swimming through the night, and she gets in that Gulf Stream, and it just starts whipping her ass. And it's, like, really hard wind, and it's choppy, and she's not really going anywhere. But then she gets to the other side of it. She makes it to the shore, and she just, like, you know, she obviously, like, vomits all this stuff. And I was thinking about it. I was like, man, isn't that funny? It's like, when you're a kid, it's smooth sailing. Then you get to the Gulf Stream, and then it's like, oh, God, what am I doing? And then you get to the other side of it, and you get rid of all that crap.
Yeah.
You get it out of you. And it wears you out, but then you wake up and you realize, man, I really accomplished something here.
Yeah.
You know? And that's kind of how I look at life now. It's like, there's going to be some things that there's going to be some days that are tough, but I think they just get better if you let them, you know, and just being thankful. It's like, but yeah, I mean, just keep the door closed behind you. You know what I mean? If you decide to go in there, keep it closed.
Yeah.
Just leave some space for yourself.
Well, dude, I appreciate the hell out of you.
Thanks for having
coming
me.
On and talking. I've been looking forward to this one.
Too.
And thank you for doing this.
Yeah,
and
man.
Congrats on the new project. Congrats on, like, I'm excited for what's coming, this chapter of Chase Bryant.
Well, man, I'm excited, really too. I have no idea what it is, but
We don't either, but I can tell you what. Everybody that I told I was doing this episode with, like, that I was having you on, they were like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
There's
awesome,
new
man.
Chase Bryant coming. Like, we're excited.
Man.
So, dude, it's awesome.
Thank
man.
You so much for taking time to have me too. I appreciate it.
Of course, man. Anything we can ever do with you're part of the Raise Rowdy family now.
Man.
So
yeah,
we appreciate the heck out of you, dude. And
good
thank
to see
you so
brother.
Much. Y'all be sure to check out our boy Chase Bryant, Ashland City, the new project. It is out right now. It dropped today, the release of this episode. And be sure to follow along with Chase Bryant as all the stuff transpires and all the new music is coming out, and everything that he's got in the world, follow him on all the socials. Thank you guys, as always, for listening, watching. For more on us, visit RaisedRowdy.com and follow along. Subscribe, rate, like, all of that stuff. Tell your mama and them, and we will see you next time. For my boy Chase Bryant, I'm Matt Barrill. This has been Outside the Round.
I ain't never been the kind for staying one place for too long. Been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple tricks on my sleeve. They usually just make them leave. So if you know me, if you really know me, you know I